Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk a lot of TV, but maybe a little bit of news. Adam was just telling me that there's Running Man casting, which yes. is kind of exciting.
Yeah, and actually the two that got cast, so we already know that Glenn Powell and supposedly Sydney Sweeney are like the leads, but then we got the word that Josh Brolin is playing the Richard Dawson role, and then Lee Pace of Guardians of the Galaxy fame has joined also as another villain, but we don't know who. And then they also joined Katie O'Brien. I don't know if you know who that is. She's the woman. She's the lead actress in the movie Love Lies Bleeding. That was the movie about the female.
Haven't seen that, but I do know her from. She was also in Twisters, right?
Yes, with
Glenn
Powell.
Yeah,
she was crew.
But she's in. She's had brief stuff in Marvel and Star Wars roles.
Yes,
she was in The Mandalorian.
Yes, she played one of the Mandos from. Whatchamacallit. She was actually a part of what's her name's crew. I can't even think of their Katie Sackhoff's character's crew. So she's like she's also in the new Mission Impossible movie. She got over Love Lies Bleeding. She got cast in a lot of things because of that movie. She's great in it. Like it's actually an awesome movie. It's pretty wild. It has like this great Ed Harris villain role where he plays like this truly decrepit, like disgusting old man. It's pretty great. But I'm excited for this one because it's literally a straight adaptation and Edgar Wright is directing it. And I feel like I like when like smart ass directors decide to take like a property and do it straight. It's like I always hoped that Joe Dante would do that. Like I'm a huge Joe Dante fan, right? But Joe Dante always had that smart ass in him, right? That smart ass streak. And I often wondered what would happen if that dude just took things seriously and made a straight, like whatever movie, whatever genre he wanted to. And everything I've heard about The Running Man is like Edgar Wright going, no. It's going to be a satire and stuff, but I'm playing it like I'm going to be playing it straight. I'm not going to do my usual. Like, I feel like they're too tied together. Him and De Palma and Joe Dante all swirl in the same kind of like, I'm too smart for my own good movie director. Like they know everything. They're kind of like Quentin in that, but they're not like Quentin where he does his own thing, right? Creating his own worlds. Like they stay within like film, like certain specific films. Like, so I'm excited. Like I really am excited about this. And I've heard that it cues a lot closer to the actual Bachman/King book. Which is a little bit more like dreary or post-apocalyptic.
It's not quite so, the Schwarzenegger Running Man is very much a movie of its time, but it also feels like a pro wrestling movie. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Where not knocking it, but it's just like, and there are pro wrestlers in it, but it is very much like that. This feels so sensationalized, which is part of that story, but not to the degree like the weird costume, like absolute useless costumes that these people are wearing that do absolutely nothing. And like it feels very influenced by the pro wrestling of the era. So, casting wrestlers as the whatever you call them, the bounty hunters, essentially, you know, kind of just seals that whole deal. So it's going to be interesting to see an approach that isn't that. And, you know, because like that cast is pretty, like, they're actors, like straight up actors. So you said Sydney Sweeney's going to be in it too?
Yeah, that's supposedly that's the thing. Like,
maybe that will sell me on Sydney Sweeney, because nothing has sold me on Sydney Sweeney. Granted, I haven't seen that much, and most of it's just Madam Web. But but I just nothing I've seen has sold me that I don't want to sound reductive, but she's a very attractive woman, and I don't see the acting skills. You know what I mean? It's like the Pam Anderson thing, where it's like, okay, but like she's really attractive, and she doesn't seem to know how to do anything except read the cue cards. So,
we're gonna see, because they're like, I really liked anyone but you, but I think a lot of that traded on the chemistry and the charisma of both of their leads, like Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney. I know, like, I mean, I fucking loved Immaculate. Like, Immaculate is a top 10 film for me this year. And most of that is her, because she's sitting front and center and she makes a compelling horror lead. I'd like to see what happens as she transitions into movies like this. I mean, of course, like, we know that, like, like, initially, it start their collaboration started with, she's supposed to do, they're still trying to figure it out. It's the budget that's in the way right now, is his version of Barbarella. Everything I heard is that he took on, like, it's at the same studio, Paramount. He's just shifted over to Running Man because it's an instant green light with Glenn Powell. And he took Sydney Sweeney along with him, which makes it even more. I think he did that because he wants, like, because they're producing Barbarella together. And I could not think of a better movie franchise or a starting of a franchise for Sydney Sweeney than Barbarella. I'm a late, late, late fan to Barbarella, the original with Jane Fonda. But
have you watched any of the, like, or read any interviews or watched any of the behind the scenes stuff, or like them talking about it later in life? About what it was like to make that movie.
Oh yeah, so much alcohol in me. So much alcohol in me. But then when you listen to that, and I mean, she was married to the director, and the director was basically just pimping her out and her body, and like. But then you watch it with the knowledge that she was like basically high or drunk the entire time, and you watch that film, and it absolutely makes sense. Like, she looks like she's high on drugs, or she's drunk.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or coked out, or like,
yeah.
I mean, there are parts of the movie where it's like, I don't think her eyes are really open.
No, they're not. They're just like, but I had no idea that Barbarella was like that, because like, I always felt like, the barrier of, like, there's a barrier, right? And it's, for me, like, with movies of that era, it's Midnight Cowboy in 1969. After that, the floodgates are open, and you get the, like, I hate using the word, like, real sexuality, but it's, like, you get, like, and it's not me being a creepy old man, it's just, like, literally, like, 69 is when it changed. So weird and so not punny intended, but so fucking intended, yeah. Like, so punny. But like Midnight Cowboy with that X rating, and it's like kind of raw sexuality mixed in with like this tragic, heartbreaking story. But that, like, Barbarella was before that. And then like, so like, I was like, oh, titillating, whatever. I'm like, I could do without it. But
yeah,
like,
but it was made in Europe. So it's a little... Like, it's a lot different. Yeah. that like French Italian kind of like influence on like, well, I mean, we can do whatever we want. So
exactly.
It's just like store a bunch of money, let's have wild parties and then try to film this, you know, fucked up adaptation of this European I think it's a French comic.
Yes, it is a French comic. I actually, because I became a little obsessed with the movie, because the movie is like fucking wild. It kind of falls into my sweet spot of like making trash, but also like so much going on behind the scenes. I actually bought the, like, because you can buy the collected volumes. And it is a very, very, very different book than it is a movie. So like Edgar Wright and Sydney Sweeney taking it on, like there's a part of me that almost wants Sean Baker to do it, because like, so he just did this, like I just reviewed his movie Anora that just came out. It's like at New York LA and it'll expand.
Yeah, I that's with what's her name, right?
Mikey. Good Lord. From Scream and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mikey, oh God, I can't, Mikey Madison. And like, it's my favorite movie of the year. Like so far, like as we close in, like it's my favorite movie of the year because of just how good it is. And it, but it's such a interesting sex positive movie about a sex worker, and it doesn't sugarcoat things, but it also doesn't villainize her or make it about the transactional relationship. It's an amazing movie. Like I will say, like I'll let like people actually discover it, and we'll have a conversation once you've seen it. But like the way that Sean Baker approaches sex and sex workers is kind of the way that Barbarella the comic approaches like the whole sexuality and her own onus of her own sexuality. That's a wild comic book. Like I like it's a wild graphic novel. I was glad that out of everything, like when I discovered it last year, that like I took the time and the money to actually invest in those comics. And yeah, I mean, I read like, I think there was like, I have a 4-volume collected set. It's all hardbound and stuff. And it has like writing, like introductions and post-critical writing from different feminist writers and stuff. It's like Barbarella is something that I discovered last year and was pretty fucking wild. And I kind of love it. So interesting. We're talking about something that is not happening, but is totally happening, and it's already happened. But yeah, obviously, like I'm really excited for, because I'm a huge fan of the Bachman novella. To which, like, I wanted to ask you something since we're on Stephen King tangent, and we're like, you know, other than a football podcast, we seem to be a Stephen King podcast, like a side podcast. I know that you bought his recent book. Did you have a chance to start reading it?
When I bought Holly, I decided, you know what? I'm not going to start with Holly. I'm going to start, even though I'd seen the Mr. Mercedes TV show, I'd seen The Outsider, which has a different, version of Holly Gibney.
Yes.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back. I'm going to start with Mr. Mercedes, and I'm going to read. So this year has been me reading the Holly Gibney, like start to finish. So I'm almost done with the Mr. Mercedes or the Bill Hodges trilogy. Okay. And then I'll read The Outsider. And then I'll read, she has a story in, is it You Like It Darker, or one of those novella collections. She has a story, and then I'll read that, and then I'll read Holly. So I haven't had a chance to read anything else, because I've been focused on, like when I was reading The Dark Tower, I kind of was... I say laser focused, but I read a little bit slower than most people. So I usually only read for about 15 minutes a day. So I don't burn through the books as quick as a lot of people would. So but You know, early next year, I should be done with all the Holly Gibney stuff. But I know that Fairy Tale is it's been optioned by A24 for a while. I think like since it was published a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that they couldn't get the movie off the ground. And so now A24 is redeveloping it as a TV series, which
I
is
feel,
interesting.
yeah, I feel like especially long running series like that, it's designed like The Outsider is a pretty fucking fabulous adaptation, and very different than the book, right? Like it's very different. It's grounded, but you know, like in like it's like you know when you realize that Richard Price, the great crime novelist, took over and developed it, you absolutely know the kind of thing that you're going to be in for, right? And it doesn't have the X-Files-ness that
Yeah.
some of the Gibney stuff can have, especially because of who she is. But like A24 taking on Holly Gibney as a kind of like X-Files-esque, because I mean I don't know about you, but I fucking miss the X-Files, like something that like a supernatural detective that is on the boundaries, and it's written like it's excellently written, and it's not like genre, but it's like it takes it seriously. Like I miss that. Like that's the kind of television that you kind of want to come back. Like both like I liked the combination of serialized storytelling that X-Files had and the one-offs, right? Like and as I got older, I loved the one-offs more than I liked the mythology. Like when I've gone back and like rewatched X-Files, especially the first like 4 or 5 seasons, the mythology is good, but man, those one-off episodes, especially anything Vince wrote, like you know, it's like I don't think that people truly appreciate how many great writers we got out of we get out of sci-fi series like that, and the Outer Limits and Twilight Zone. But yeah, dude, like I'd be totally down for a fucking like Holly Gibney like A24 TV series. The it's all gonna depend, and you probably agree with me, the casting. Like who do you cast as Holly Gibney? Because you can't do Cynthia Erivo because she's a part of that outsider world, and but like whoever you cast, it has to be somebody super, super compelling, right? Like, but I just don't know. Like, who would you cast as Holly Gibney? Like, if you had a chance.
See, I that's tough because having watched the Mr. Mercedes TV show and seen The Outsider, while they're very different portrayals of that character, Cynthia Erivo and Justine Lupe, who plays her in the Mr. Mercedes show, do such a fantastic job that I don't know. Like, Justine Lupe's Holly Gibney seems very close to who she is in the Hodges stuff. Like, if you are a King fan, like, seek out the Mr. Mercedes TV series. Like, there's 3 seasons. It adapts the 3 Bill Hodges books. The second one, it's a lot looser. Well, actually, the second and the third are both pretty loose. But it's still such a good adaptation that, like, I'm still getting a lot out of just reading the books. But yeah, it would be really difficult to recast that role for a third time because they did such a good job both other times they cast the role. Like, I don't know what you would do. Reading it, I don't know if anybody could really do it justice. But maybe Mike Flanagan could, but I know he's got his hands full with a bunch of other stuff right now.
Yeah. you know, and
If It Bleeds, that's the other one she's in, not You Like It Darker. It's If It Bleeds.
Oh, okay, okay.
So.
I would very much, yeah, like it's one of the, it's very weird. They've casted it twice, and it's going to be a third different time, right? I just don't understand how you like here's the thing is like how can you not like it's a pretty easy thing to not cast, but it's like not doing it like failing at an adaptation. I feel like it's stuff that is so easy to adapt because it's so, I'm not going to say it's commercial, but it's definitely something that it feels like, how can I put it? It feels like it's designed for the big screen, right? Like some of King's work is so massive and so kind of set in a novelistic world that it's impossible to adapt. Like, I still feel like The Stand, even though it's had two adaptations, is never going to be accurately adapted. It's just, it's too much of a novel. But the Holly Gibney stuff that I've read is very cinematic. Like, it's easy to adapt. Like, it's not got a lot of fat on it, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't know. Holly is one of those true King adaptations. Do you know what I mean? Like, or one of those true King books, like where he's been kind of circling around the character and then finally decided, oh, I'm going to do a full on King style book and make it almost impossible to adapt. I don't know because I haven't read it, but it's all to say it's going to be interesting to hear what happens if they're going to, like, if they are actually going to adapt it to TV.
There's so much. I mean, I feel like there's always King stuff in the works, but like,
yeah,
Mike Flanagan is like working apparently diligently on at least the Dark Tower stuff, if not other adaptations. A fairy tale series is in the work. Holly series is in the works. Somebody is doing a series based on the Institute.
Wow.
And yeah, I can't remember who it is though. But that was a couple of months ago, I think, that it was announced that somebody had optioned it as a television series. And I feel like there's another one. But then you have something like Salem's Lot that sat on a shelf at Warner Brothers forever. Yep. And they finally release it and people are like, "Oh wait, like this is it, this is what you were like," not like super shitty where it's like, well, you should have just not released it, but you know, there were so many people clamoring for it. Mm-hmm. And when they finally do release it, it's like, oh yeah, that was not what we wanted, which is really weird to me because I feel like a King vampire story should be maybe not easy to adapt, but like, how do you keep fucking up a vampire story? I don't.
I feel like that adaptation got the winds knocked out of it when Flanagan decided to you know, the story about Midnight Mass, right? Is that he wanted to do Salem's Lot and they didn't choose him. And so he was like, fuck you then, I'm going to do my own. And he, like, I feel like Midnight Mass outdid Salem's Lot, even in its novel form. Like as I've gotten older, I've kind of come to this realization, like, you know, King is very kind of like on point when he talks about like his drug addiction and how it affected his writing. If you read Salem's Lot and Cujo and The Shining, if you ever read it again, because he was in the depths of his alcohol addiction, you can read them and realize this is a guy who's fucking drunk off his ass, just improvising. And because his id is so creative and his, like, his storytelling acumen as a drunk is so wild that he makes these, like, they make leaps and then they pay off, but it's a very kind of like your alcoholic uncle telling you a story. Like, yeah. Like it's very wild to read that. Like The Shining reads exactly like the way, like I feel like the power of The Shining is the fact that you have an alcoholic telling an alcoholic story and having no distance between it. So like you're literally reading something that is like a critique, but it's not a, because the guy doesn't actually fucking understand that he's the drunk that's in the story, and not until later, right? And I feel like Salem's Lot comes from that too. It's a very angry it's a very angry book. But then like I watch Midnight Mass and I'm like, this is like basically out Stephen King from the 70s work, because it like it's literally Salem's Lot. Like I'm like, how the fuck did he get away with this? So like, you know, a fucking adaptation of Salem's Lot that's like an hour and 45 minutes is not gonna like, and is kind of like a lower budget version of it, is not gonna do, right? Like, especially after we got and It Chapter Two, like in the modern era, like of King adaptation in cinema, like that made it an event.
What sucks about Salem, for me anyway, about Salem's Lot is, well, first of all, I don't think the book is actually, like, it's okay. But I don't think it's that great. No. So that's why I feel like adapting it is and failing almost every time is bizarre, because I don't think the book's that great to begin with. So, like, I mean, it's good. It's just not like top for me. It's not top tier King. So we have what, a mini series in the late 70s, early 80s. Yes. Then in like the early 2000s, we had another miniseries with Rob Lowe and Andre Brower. And now this past year, we finally got the movie. And like, I haven't watched the movie, but I've seen both miniseries. I've read the book. Everybody says the movie is just, eh. And I'm like, so maybe when I'm 70, I'll see like somebody take this material and really do something with it. Like that sucks. Like, you know,
or I mean, like, you know, so like rights always change hands, right? And so part of Salem's Lot, what sucks about like the thing about Salem's Lot is that it ties so much to the Dark Tower, like especially if you know, like it makes you go, like when you read the Zakala, like it makes you go back to read Salem's Lot because the characters there. I think we've talked about this before, but it's like, it's almost like if Flanagan is going to do the King verse, like in the Dark Tower stuff, he has to do like the side tangential ones, right? Like Insomnia, like Salem's Lot, because it all ties together.
I just don't think anybody's going to get another shot at Salem's Lot.
Well,
not for a long time.
Well, okay. So like, here's the thing. Let's say he does do his Dark Tower, right? And each season is one of the books. Well, season one can be both the first book and the second book, right? But then you start getting into that. You can integrate, as long as he's able like to get the rights, and Amazon, you know, we all know Amazon doesn't love to spend money. I mean, big love to spend money, and they have this Flanagan thing, right? So what would you say to like Wolves of Kala and Salem's Lot being a season of a Flanagan show? It almost feels like he would be repeating himself, because like I said, Midnight Mass is basically Salem's Lot without the characters' names. But you are kind of right that it's kind of weird that you can't get a vampire story right. Like, how hard is it, right? It's not that difficult.
it feels like a weird thing to be super faithful to, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, because there's nothing to be like, it just doesn't feel like when you read the book, there's meat on the bones, but it's very light. Like, back in the 70s, I could totally see it, like, Salem's Lot being something like, oh, shit, we're reinterpreting, like, it feels like it comes from the 70s, right? Like, you read the book and you're like, oh, yeah, that's totally a 70s fucking thing, right? And, like, I don't know, man, like, it doesn't feel, like, it feels antiquated at this point. Like, you, like, to your point, like, it feels, like, very antiquated, and it's like, What do you bring to another adaptation, a fourth adaptation of that book? And the answer is probably nothing.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're... So, Stars, I think a couple of years ago, with Adrian Brody, had a prequel, like a...
Well, yes,
prequel, right. I mean, set in like the 1800s series that was... It was decent, but like it was on a network that nobody watches. Like, COVID hit, yeah. So they'd announced another season, but like it just didn't happen because it didn't happen, you know. And it was doing something interesting with like the kind of lore that was established, but. You got to do something different with it. You know, I'm not saying Twilight it up, but it's just got to be better than whatever they're doing now. And I don't think anybody's going to get another shot at it unless they actually have a different take that isn't like, we're going to adapt the book again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. So, absolutely.
But anyway.
Wow, we went on a fucking tangent, didn't we? another thing that happened this week was, and I know it doesn't sound like news, but it absolutely is news when we get into it, which is this. We got a poster for the Karate Kid movie that's coming out next Memorial Day, 6 months from now, 7 months.
To me, the only news here is that Jaden Smith's name is not on the poster.
Yeah, well, it's also like, to be honest, I thought it was going to be about, it was going to be like an Avengers style, like, big movie about... like everything that's happened in the TV show, and it appears that it's not, that it's a brand new like reboot of the Karate Kid mythos, but using Jackie Chan's I can't think of his name, I think it's actually Mr. Chan in the movie, in the Jaden Smith movie, and then Ralph Macchio train, like it looks like they're going to be training this one kid who's actually an Asian kid, so like the Karate Kid name is applicable here, which is fucking wild that it took, you know, like everybody talking about taking six seasons, five movies, however many movies we've had, to have a character of Asian descent be the Karate Kid. But you know, there we go. Did you know that it was not going to be this kind of like Avengers swirl or like this wrap up of the TV show?
Yeah. They hadn't. So when the initial casting was announced and nobody from the television show except Ralph Macchio was announced as part of the cast, I was like, yeah, don't like that. Like, I mean, I get the show. It is what it is. I enjoyed it. It's super cheesy. But, yeah, not bringing any of those people into it. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to be like a straight up reboot. And maybe it references stuff from the show. But, like, you know, his wife is not part of the cast. His kids are not part of the cast. Yeah, and maybe we're wrong. Maybe they are there and it's just not. But, like, the movie comes out next year, so it's filming. And none of these people are part of the cast. So, yeah, you know, maybe I'll see it. Maybe I won't. The show's going to wrap itself up. That kind of makes me happy that at least the show is going to be the show, and that's going to be it. Like that's fine, and you know, good for Ralph Macchio, but yeah, it sucks because, you know, I hate to sound shitty, but he's kind of the worst part of the show.
That's what everybody tells me.
I mean, it's not great. It's weird because, like, they talk about karate and karate tournaments like it's saving the world.
Uh-huh.
And when it's the kids, you're like, it's kids. You know, when you're in high school, everything feels like the world. Mm-hmm. And when it's Johnny, he's such a, like, to borrow another TV show title, he's in such arrested development, like, that you understand he's stuck there. But Daniel in the show, like, he kind of milks that whole thing because he's a car salesman, kind of that, like, ex-athlete car salesman thing that you see mm-hmm. happen a lot. So when you meet him in the show, when he's reintroduced, like, that's who he is. And for him to once again start taking it so seriously when he very much existed in the real world, like, he had a real job. He mm-hmm. I don't mean taking karate seriously, like the
drama of it all,
right? I mean the drama yeah. of it seriously.
Yeah.
I appreciate the seriousness of, like, the martial arts and the, like, the meditation and, like that I appreciate. It's mm-hmm. the high school drama-ness of it all that he takes so and it just feels wrong coming from him. He never feels comfortable delivering any of the dialogue because he feels like an adult. Whereas Johnny still, as adult as Johnny is, he still feels like that kid that beat up Daniel on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's never, matured past that age. And so you kind of just are on that ride with him. It's Daniel that, like, every time he delivers some goofy, dumbass bit of dialogue, him or his wife, it's so hammy and not in a good way. But anyway, I'm not, like, knowing all of that, I'm not super excited about the movie. I may see it, like, you know, when reviews start coming out, but, like, I mean, and like I said, to me, the biggest news about the poster was, like, oh, Jaden Smith is not going to be in this movie.
No, he's not. The crazier part about this is that all of the creatives behind the movie
are behind the
TV show. That's the thing that's fucking weird to me. And the other thing is that, okay, so we have Ming-Na Wen, Danny McBride, Joshua Jackson, all a part of this movie, but they're not. I mean,
for all we know, the end of the show has Daniel, like, going to
this kid.
The show could lead into the movie and have Daniel separated from all of that and, you know, make it understandable. So I guess ultimately it will just depend on how the show ends and where that character is at the end of the show. I hope they don't do the thing where they rewrite or, like, try to erase the continuity of the show. I would hope that they would not do that, considering it's the creatives from the show. I'd rather them just ignore it altogether. Like, don't say he never got married and never had kids. If they're not part of it, just don't bring up the fact that he doesn't, that he has a wife and two children, and just leave it alone, you know? Like, just ignore the continuity of it. Don't erase the continuity of it. But yeah, you know, I don't know. We'll see. So, also, I just remember this. Apparently, there is a Spider-Man 4 script, and Tom Holland and Zendaya have both read it. And while he, I think this is what he said, quote, there's still work to do. He said that they are very, very happy with the direction. So that's interesting.
That is interesting. And like, I guess they were reading it together and playing their parts, which means that she's an active part of the script, which makes sense. I mean, you know, of course, like, you know, it like, I feel like the Spider-Man 4 script is like the dictum from Kevin is like, so we need to find Pete's way back to MJ. Like, and if you need to make that the story, then you make that the story, and that's the heart of it. Because, I mean, these movies are essentially, like, and I hate saying this because it makes me laugh, because they are not, but, like, Kevin has always said that these are teen romance movies, and I laugh at that. Like, they're Hughes movies, right? They're John Hughes movies. So, like, I could see the evolution of this being from John Hughes to Cameron Crowe. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the
style. Yeah.
Like, it evolves because he's in college. That seemed like a very kind of Cameron Crowe-esque kind of thing. Or even, like, you know, young people in their mid to late 20s, singles, like, you know, Elizabeth Town, even though Elizabeth Town is the one, or even Almost Famous, like the vibe of it, not necessarily like the intrinsic plot mechanics. And you know, like, I'm for the fourth Spider-Man. It's just, if you were to ask me, so tomorrow you could either have Spider-Man 4 or the third Into the Spider-Verse, the Spider-Verse movie, I would absolutely fucking take Spider-Verse. I'd be like,
I think it's going to be a very long time before we see that movie.
Yeah, well, everything that we've heard, it's very disheartening and fucking, like, let's not talk about that. That makes, we'll probably get another Spider-Man game before we get the Into the Spider-Verse, the next Into the Spider-Verse
movie. I saw somebody shit posting about Spider-Man 2 the other day, and what? How it just shit on the whole, like, how the first Spider-Man game was so great, and Spider-Man 2 just shit all over it, and I was like, What game did you play, man?
Seriously. fucking gamers, man. Fucking gamers, dude. Like, what are you talking about? Like, Spider-Man 2 was, like, fucking elite. That game, like, that fucking game is so good that it kind of got me choked up playing it. There's a couple of, like, there was one mission in particular that got me choked up, the old man. Like, that fucking just fuck. But then also the end.
I mean, if the cinematics in that game were 15% better, it would be, like, one of the best animated films of the last few years.
Yes. It's that good. It's, like, and the amount of story that they tell, and that, like, and the amount of villains that they use properly, I don't know. Fuck. Somebody saying that that's a shitty game, I'm like, I fucking don't know what.
They weren't knocking the gameplay. They were knocking, like, the story of the game. And yeah. I'm just like, okay, whatever. Like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the story. I thought it did justice to the Venom story as best it could. Like, I just, whatever. Fuck off.
Yeah.
all right. Let's talk some TV.
Yes.
So, I really, really want to get into Agatha, but there's so much more coming, but, like, very, like, 2 minutes. This week's episode and seeing Billy's story, and there were so many people when Marvel kept, like, no, we're doing Agatha. So many people were like, who the fuck is asking for this? Nobody's asking for this. And they're like, no, but we're doing Agatha. Like, everybody liked Agatha. We're gonna do Agatha. Like, fuck all of you.
Yep.
This show matters. This show counts. This show's fucking fantastic. And this past week's episode, Billy's story, proves exactly why they continued. Why, like, all the fan bitching, like, they knew what they had. They knew what they were doing. This show, I don't, if they don't botch the ending, which we've got four episodes left.
No.
Yeah, if they don't botch the ending, this will be my favorite Marvel television project, period.
That tracks perfectly, because, like, I can see that, because it's elite storytelling. Like, if you can take a bottle episode, like, this week was a bottle episode, right? Like no budget.
It was all fucking, it does one of my favorite things in, like, storytelling, where it's Back to the Future 2, like, yeah, where you're going back into the story that you already know and showing it from, like, a different point of view. Like, seeing Agatha do all of her shit through Billy's eyes, and it was incredible. And seeing that different perspective.
No, yeah, absolutely. The Boner family reunion.
That was the fucking garden done. Like, him showing back up is, like, first of all, is he's got to be one of the most down people in working actors today. Like, yeah, it seems like not in necessarily like a Christopher Walken way, where it's just like, oh, did the check clear? I'll show up. But in a, like, oh, you need me for 15 minutes? You can pay me this? Sure. I'll be there. And then I will fucking kill it. I need to know how much of that was written and how much of that is him. Because, yeah, I feel like a lot of the little aside shit is him improvising.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. I would not doubt it in one bit, because he's so, like, when you watch him in other things, he's so good. And, like, Evan Peters is, like, for me, like, what I've learned is that through this, and I, even though I didn't talk about Murder, Madurder, sorry, that's not the mayor of East Town, like, because I just didn't like it, but I loved him in it. Like, he's super fucking great. Like, he's great. Like, he's like, Evan Peters is like this guy that we kind of all have slept on and continue to sleep on, because, like,
I just saw his episode of the, I mean, I've seen it before. I just rewatched his episode of The Office.
Oh my God.
And I watched the extended cut, because Peacock does the extended versions. And so they have his extended cut, and, like, him just playing that, like, bratty ass piece of shit, like, it's so, you're right, like, people have slept on this guy, like, not to a huge extent, but I, like, he's just,
but why,
good at, why, everything, man. Why is
he only, but, like, it's like the question is, why is he only in TV, right? Like,
I mean, he was in those new X-Men movies that didn't, yeah, pan out for him, but he was one of the best parts of that.
Oh God, yes. His quick, like we didn't need Quicksilver, but his Quicksilver is so fucking great. Like, his, like, everything he does in Days of Future Past is super fucking awesome, because he's exactly what you want Quicksilver to be, right? Like, more than Aaron Taylor Johnson's, like, weird Russo fucking Eastern European thing. Like, I don't like, I watched those movies and he's the weakest link of that, those of that Avengers movie. I mean, and there's a lot about like Age of Ultron that I'm not a big fan of. And, but at the same time, like, I can like, yeah, he's like, you know, like you watch those two Quicksilvers and who'd have thought that the X-Men Quicksilver from the Fox budget version was the better version.
Yeah. But yeah, just Agatha is just Marvel and DC both are absolutely killing it right now. You know, the Penguin is fucking great. And like we beat this drum, so I won't do it again. But like it's nice that everybody's saying it. Give her the Emmys. Give her the Emmy. Give her the Emmy. And like her spotlight episode this past week was like proof positive of what we've been saying since literally episode one. Like, oh shit, like this is his show, but like, man, she's driving it.
Yeah. So. She if they don't like, the thing is that I don't want her to get more superhero work unless it's this level, but I also like, I want her to get this kind of level of work because she deserves it at this point. She's proven like without a shadow of a doubt that like if there was a reason for this show to happen, it was because of her, right? Like more so than like, and it's so weird to say that, more so than Colin Farrell's like Oz, right? Like Ozzy, like, and the entire, like, that's not to take away from him though. Like,
think about it, like, so you
fucking good.
You, and it absolutely is. And you could have the show just be about her without him, and it absolutely worked, but you don't get the show greenlit without him.
No,
and
you don't.
So, and, you know, props to him for, like, understanding that this is it's a two-hander, like it's taking both of them, but like that she is like the like you think it's his story, and it is about him trying to take that power, but it's her story. It's, you think he's trying to take that power from like, oh, he did away with most of one family. Now he's trying to do away with one of the other crime families and pit them against each other. But like what you realize is that like he's fighting her for this power. Like,
yeah,
that conversation with her and her dad when he tells her your brother's a dipshit and he's never going to be able to do this. You're gonna have to be the one that runs things when I can't or when I'm gone. And it like is a very you watch most of season one of House of the Dragon, right? So
yeah,
that's kind of what happens in House of the Dragon. And then you have all these people arguing over the fact that like, oh, we're gonna be led by a woman. And so there's a little bit of that in play here, but I feel like this does it way better and more succinct than House of the Dragon, because that show's had two seasons and it still hasn't got to the point.
Where this show in like five episodes has managed to become like a very sharp instrument in showing what its storytelling is about. No, absolutely. Like, who would have thought, like, if we start, like, we knew back in January that this show was going to happen, right? And we knew
pretty early on that she was a part of it. Anybody that has seen anything she's done knows what a capable actress she is. She can be funny. She can be sexy. She can be, you know, dramatic. She can be terrifying. If you've seen anything she's done, you know she's a capable actress.
But to
put all of that into, like, this is next level, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would have not have told you that one of the best things that that would come out of 2024 would have been Penguin. I would have not told you that, because it's just like you hear the log line, Oswald Cobblepot, aka the Penguin, post the events of the Batman, tries to succeed power from in a power play. Like, if you had just told me that, I'd be like, oh, okay. It is what it is. I mean, it's going to be okay. I would not have said that it's probably one of the best TV shows that's currently running. And I'm sad that we're not going to get a second season, that this is going to end with whatever, however it ends, sets part of the table for the Batman 2.
Yeah.
Which is wild. Which is fucking wild. Like, it is truly like, they're saying Dune 2, Dune, like, whatever this Dune doo-doo part 2, whatever this TV series is, they're saying it's supposed to help tie the world, make it a larger universe. Like, I don't feel like anything I've seen of it, it's like, it looks like it's taking place in the past. It looks like the Dragon
Show. Oh, it is a prequel. It's definitely a prequel.
Yeah.
And it's one I kind of want to watch. Like, the trailer does get me interested, but it being Dune makes me less interested. Which makes it sound like I have a problem with the story of Dune. I don't. I haven't seen the movies. I don't intend to see the movies. So, watching the prequel might entice me to watch the movies. I don't really want to. So, I'm like, I'll just skip it all together.
But okay, it looks interesting, right? Yeah, it does. But I don't think it's going to be the level that Penguin is. Like, I don't think that there's very few shows that are going to be the level of the Penguin, because it's that fucking good. Like, it's that fucking, like, it might be the best TV show I see this year. I mean, there's very few things left that I can kind of honestly say has, like, threw me for a loop in its storytelling and its ability to surprise, but also in its ability to tell like a story that could have been very like Sopranos 2.0, but it's not. It's so not bad. It's so much. It's so much
getting a lot of comparisons to like those shows. Maybe a lot of Sopranos, maybe a little bit of The Wire, and a lot the fans of those shows will probably tell you that I've seen some of The Wire and none of the Sopranos. But fans of those shows will probably tell you, oh, it's not on the level that those shows are on, and they're probably right. But the fact that it's in that conversation is that's the achievement.
Exactly. In this amount of time, I don't think that people understand. This is only we didn't start talking about the Sopranos as the quote unquote the Sopranos until season 4. Like, people don't remember that. And The Wire wasn't The Wire until it ended. This is a show that we're already saying, Jesus Christ, this is good and super good. And it's only going to have, 8 episodes? And then it's done? But
you know what? I feel like it's not quite the level of Agatha where people were saying, who the hell wants this? But it was also in that conversation of, you're doing a show about the Penguin? Who wants...
Exactly.
Okay, I guess he was fine in the Batman, but you're doing... And... I don't know. Both of these shows, it's that whole, you don't know what you want thing. Mm-hmm. So we're going to tell a good story. And if you don't want to watch it and you just want to bitch about it from the sideline, okay. But we're going to go tell a good story. And the people that stick with it are going to see, what we're driving at. And both of these shows are excelling at what they set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an inkling that Agatha was when we saw the kid, It was like, oh, are we gonna do Wanda's kids? And like they try to throw you off from the jump, but you know, it's still there in your and I don't think they do this whole bullshit like it was this all along thing. I think it's very obvious. Like even Agatha is like, yeah, I knew it the whole time. So yeah, like they do try to play it off, but not super seriously try to play it off. They're like, yeah, you know what, like you, but then you see like, just all across the board, Marvel and DC, like the last month, absolutely fucking killing it. And yep. I could not be happier. I my Marvel hopes are way up, my DC hopes are way up. We'll see what 2025 brings in regards to all of that. But let's talk about another show we did both watch, because I have a lot of shows that you haven't seen that I want to hit you with. We're both Abbotters. We beat the drum for this show since we started podcasting. Abbott Elementary, back as of a few weeks ago. I don't know how you felt about this. This was the third episode of the season? Or the second? No, it's the second episode of the season.
No, second episode. Yeah, you're right.
The first episode, it was okay. I was like, okay, they're in the relationship thing. It is what it is. But this, the ringworm episode, I was like, this is where this show absolutely just slays. It's so good.
It really does. And it really is. Like, I don't, like, it's, I often call things magic tricks, but it really is a magic trick in this one, because it's like, it tells this, like, it tells this story that reveals character in a way that you don't expect. Like, it really is like, it's the nicer version of The Office, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, at least
it,
to me.
Yeah, it doesn't have this, the, like, base cynicism that The Office has. So,
and the meanness, like the true mean, like there are mean, it has a mean streak in it, but it's not as, it's not as cynical as The Office, right? But it has that ability that The Office does, that takes a situation and doesn't make it about the plot. It makes it about the revealing of a character or characters, and it gives you new light on everybody that is going through this specific thing, right? Like, it's about a case of ringworm. And you would think that this is like, it's just going to be about, like, you know, quarantining off people and stuff, but it's so much more than that. Like, it's like, it gives you these little, like, windows into the various characters of the series, right? Which is fucking wild. Which is wild. Like Janine and what's her name agreeing on, like, you know, policy when it comes to the quarantining of kids with ringworms. You know, it's wild. It's just, it's wild that they're like, that they're able to do this and able to get it through the system. I mean, I guess it's now at the point where, like, you know, where Quinta Brunson is writing her own check and, like, writing her own thing creatively, right? Like, you would be stupid if you were ABC to, like, say, like, try to fucking give her notes on things. But also, it's like a ringworm episode. I mean, like that's the first thing there where you go, that's where, like, a studio would probably be like, yeah, we need to cut this. Like, we don't like ringworm, why do this? But they don't.
Yeah. And it's, you talk about bottle episodes, like, it's not exactly a bottle episode. I mean, kind of every episode of the show is kind of a bottle episode. But, like, that quarantining thing and the locking everybody down, and then like the way Tyler James Williams or Gregory Eddy, his character, reacts to just everything. And we already knew what a germaphobe he was, but watching how that happens now that he's in this relationship with Janine, and like it's so great. It's so funny. And yeah, like I don't know. This show, every time I think like, yeah, like it's still really good. Like it'll pull this kind of card, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is still really, really great, man. Absolutely great. So
It
and
really is.
here's this happened last season, but I didn't really talk about it. Them finding a way to keep Zach Fox, who plays Tariq, in the show without having him date Janine is like a flash of brilliance. Like he's the head of the PTA now.
DA.
Like
Yeah,
he
with his
doesn't
girlfriend.
have a child.
No, he doesn't. But like, so the thing that made me laugh so fucking hard is like the Will Smith Wild Wild West.
That whole conversation, like them talking about what Will Smith's best movie is. First of all, anybody that thinks Bagger Vance is his best movie is insane.
But Mr. Eddie is insane, as we find out. Like as we go forward in this show, we find out that he is more and more insane than we could possibly have imagined. But yes, like that is hilarious. But then it switches over to even worse, Wild Wild West, and it's almost like they're trying to recontextualize Wild Wild West. And I can't wait for a bunch of people to watch this fucking shitty ass movie and go, what the fuck? What were they thinking? In addition to like the whole flash mob scene, which was
Yeah,
like, for me, was like great. Like,
what a
that's what.
that's it might be like I'd have to go back and watch him, but like this show's had like a lot of these shows always have good cold opens, these types of shows. I don't know what it is about the like the quote documentary style shows that they do these cold opens so well, but they really do. The Office has so many good cold opens. But this one is, especially for Abbott, I think up there for their cold opens. Like and like the whole like it's a PTA event in Philly. It's gonna end how all PTA events in Philly end. And it's just them line dancing to what
See, yep. Will Smith's Wild Wild West. Like,
It was so great, man. I'm really excited about this season, knowing the Always Sunny cast is going to guest star as those characters is really exciting. I'm sure there's a lot more surprises because the show just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it should. It's absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. Like it's a wonderful show. It's I don't know what other to say than it's just a wonderful show and like 30 minutes of pure unadulterated joy. Even if you're not expecting it. Like there are times like I get grump. Like I get like a little bit of grump, like I don't know, I don't want to watch. Shut up, Adam, and just watch it. Like that's literally how I feel sometimes. I'm just like, okay, just shut the fuck up and watch it because you're gonna find something that you're gonna love about the show. And usually it's more than just one thing. It's like 35 things because they just stack so much because they write all of their characters so well. Like better than like it's like watching The Office, right? Where you like to make an analogy, it's almost like, oh, how can I put it? It's like watching. Like, I know some people are going to hate me for this because they're not Dodger fans, but it's like watching the Dodgers. Like, you don't realize how good the Dodgers are until you watch a couple of games, right? And you realize every single one of them is like playing at an all-star level, right? So like their batting order is such that you can't not pitch to anybody, right? And it's like, that's the way I feel about Abbott, is that Abbott is like, you kind of look at it and you like from the outside, or even if you're like, you know, you're just somebody who watches it, like you go, yeah, they're good. But then you watch it and you go, oh, no. They're not just good. They're great. I mean, it's not just like Cheryl Lee Ralph, it's not just Cheryl Lee Ralph and Quinta Brunson. It's like everybody in that fucking show, all of the lineup is just their murderer's row of like comedic and dramatic talent, because they just don't balance. It's not just funny. Like they get the truthfulness at the core of it. Right. Yeah. It's really great to be around for a show that is like running at an elite level of comedy that you just can't, there's nothing on TV that's like it. And it doesn't use any kind of, like, the weirdest part is that it doesn't use foul language. It doesn't go to like the crassness, but it's absolutely the most entertaining, intelligent, and adult minded show out there, even though it's dealing with a bunch of fucking kids.
Yeah.
Like, or an elementary school.
Yeah.
So it's great.
It's so good. Like I said, the first episode back, I was like, oh yeah, I mean, I'm glad it's back. It makes me happy to watch it, but I'm like, there are those episodes of The Office or whatever show you love, mm-hmm. that you're like, oh yeah, that was an okay episode. And then this episode, I was just like, ah, it's a home run all the way, man. Like I understand why this can't be the season premiere, mm-hmm. because like you have the whole back to schoolness of it all. But yes. Like, yeah, this being the second episode out the gate, absolute home run. So, are you caught up on Only Murders? Because I know you watch that too.
Yeah, I'm caught up on Only Murders.
I don't think this week did anything to further too much of what we learned the last few episodes. Other than kind of let the Westies off the hook, more or less.
Yeah. It's good. It was okay. So it did something very simple. Like it did exactly what Agatha did, but I feel like Agatha did it better because there was purpose. And at the end of it, I felt like I went a lot farther with Agatha, whereas Only Murderers didn't really bring anything to the table other than contextualizing things.
Yeah. Yeah. It broke down that story. It solved that mystery of like who these people are, why they're doing what they're doing, what mm-hmm. happened there. But it didn't further like the plot that we've been dealing with this season.
Exactly.
Which makes it sound like filler. It was so entertaining, but
oh yeah.
It was like, oh, we left you with this cliffhanger mystery last episode. We're going to solve literally every ounce of that in the next episode and then move on from there. Like, who is really trying to kill them? Because it, like, you thought it might be those people in the other building, and now we're going to show you why it isn't. So,
yeah.
But I mean, it's still good. So, I'm sure we can have a longer conversation once the whole thing has unfolded. So I know I've so many shows I've watched this week, which it's weird because I didn't think I'd watch that much. But looking at my list, some things I beat the drum for before, I know I've talked about from. I know nobody's watching this show. The show is doing something Lost-esque, but it feels less like, we don't know where we're going, but here's a twist. It feels like they know what they're doing. And I think everybody, not everybody, it's not a show for everybody, but if you like spooky shows going into, like, it's October. If you like spooky shows, you should be watching From. It's really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, you talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It's on my list of things to watch. Definitely, because I love Harold Pernow. Like, I just love him. Like, he's such a great actor.
Yeah. It's such, it's like The Lost meets Walking Dead. And it's got a driving mystery of like why this is happening the way Lost did.
Mm-hmm.
And Walking, it's got not zombies, but it's got characters that are like definitely an imposing threat every episode. So it gives you that like drive. Like, so yeah, it's not as aimless as Lost was. And it's also more focused than The Walking Dead was, where after season one of The Walking Dead, it became just so unfocused and didn't know which way to turn. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's such a good show, and what it's done this, I will say, this seems to be a common thing for me. Like, this season started, and I was like, eh.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, I it's been a couple of years at this point since the last season because of strikes and everything. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not, like, I don't know if this show can do it. And then by the end of the second episode, maybe it's the third episode. In between the second and third episode, it became, you'll get this if you're a Lost watcher. Mm-hmm. It became a we have to go back moment.
Oh, interesting.
Where it was like, what the fuck is happening? Wait, where are we? What are we doing? Who? What? So, yeah, I was in the first episode, and by like the end of the second, and definitely the end of the third episode, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
That's great.
Also, Daryl Dixon, season one, didn't love it. Yes,
yeah.
The Book of Carol. Turns out what Daryl Dixon is missing is
Carol. I mean, like, let's be honest, like, they're so tied to one another, like, that makes sense, dude, right?
There's three episodes into this season already. Actually, I've seen four episodes. But the third episode finally puts them in the same place. And tease for the upcoming episode. They finally reunite. And when they reunite, I was just like, this is what this show needs. Like, I've been watching, waiting for this. It happened. I feel so much better. They're great together. This is great. Another show I know I beat the drum the last few weeks since it came back, Superman and Lois, doing the death of Superman. Last episode, fucking tears, just so good. This show, it is, as it stands right now, the best live action Superman thing that's ever existed.
Wow. So when they did I take it they've done the death and they did the funeral, did they bring back everybody from the Arrowverse?
No.
Okay. Interesting.
So it was, they did not have a funeral for Superman.
Mm-hmm.
They did like small character mourning thing. It's really about his family, about Lois, about his sons, about his father-in-law. It's about their reactions to his death. And like, we're a few episodes into the season now, and he's still dead. So, like, and they only got 8 or 10 episodes for this season. I think it's 10. And so he's in the show because it's a lot of flashbacks. It's been 3 episodes, and it's been a lot of flashbacks. But it's not without its, like, moments of it. It's tugging at your heartstrings. You see what it's doing, but it's doing it so well. There was a character death in episode 3 that is just, it was so emotional. But comic book TV shows right now are really fucking doing it for me. So, another show I beat the drum for, English Teacher, had its season finale this past week. It was good. It wasn't great. It had its moments. I think the finale was actually maybe the weakest episode of the show so far.
Oh, wow.
But it's still, like, the whole season's out there. I think it's worth watching.
Okay.
I think you'd probably like it if you, I know you got a lot of shit on to watch, so it's hard to make time for. But it's pretty good. Another show that you watched but you didn't have time for, I did manage to see one episode of the 2-episode premiere of Shrinking.
Okay. Do we want to save that for next week when we talk about it? Or
absolutely. But I will say this. I just mentioned how it seems like my current pattern is premiere episodes, season premiere episodes. I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
And then I'm back into it 3 or 4 episodes in. Don't got to worry about that with this show.
I mean, we kind of figured that, right? Like at least for me, it was like,
it might not be a home run, but it's a good triple. So it drives some stuff home. It's picking up right back where it started. Also, like, there's a pretty big guest star that it looks like it's going to be showing up in the season. Won't spoil that for you. So excited to see hear your reaction to that. So,
all right. Well, I will definitely let you know, because we will be watching it. That's going to be probably our Saturday night, along with a couple of other things that we've been saving and stuff. So, you know, instead of going out to the movies, just stay home and watch some great TV.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just literally, like, you know, like Apple TV has been on a run recently. You know,
I gotta start watching more Apple shows, man.
Yeah. Like, I mean, especially if they're like, you know, the quality of Bad Monkey and Shrinking, and just like, it's just, they're just good shows. Like, it's weird because, like, I watch Shrinking and I think they're doing something that I don't think a lot of people are doing, which is doing classic TV. Like, Bad Monkey is basically just a detective show, right? But it's done with a flair that you don't see normally on a detective show, right? Like Bill Trent, whatever that is.
Will Trent, yeah.
Will Trent. Or The Rookie. Like, these are like
I got sucked into Will Trent. I regret it, but now I'm 2 seasons in and I'm like, well, I guess I'll watch it till they cancel it. But, and plus it's got, what's her name in it, who I've always enjoyed. I'm blanking on her name, but, she plays his, coworker / love interest.
I know who you're talking about. I can't even think of her name. They've got that Caitlin Olsen movie, like TV show, where it's like,
yeah, I've zero interest in that. That it feels like, what if it's Matt Damon, but it's a lady, and instead of solving a math problem, she's solving murders. And I'm like, I don't want to. She's great. I like her. I'm happy Erica for her. Yeah, that's her.
Erica Christensen is the one that's in Will Trent. I always want to call it Bill Trent. I don't know why. But it's like, like those are like the usual detective shows, but Bad Monkey is not that. Like, it's so not that. It's the antithesis of those kinds of formulaic shows, because there's no formula for this show. The same with Shrinking. Shrinking is like a, it's like a mid-aughts like drama about like leaving and lost, but it's not done anything like those mid-aughts like roll your eyes bullshit.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't swirl the drain. It, I don't know. Like, it's the, like, again, it's like this whole thing of like the touch at which you bring it, and it just feels like it's elevated in a way that some of these formulaic shows just aren't. And you know, it's like, yeah, Will Trent, Bad Monkey, they're not the same show, even though they are the same show. but yeah, like, we will definitely have a conversation, because like, yeah, like, I mean, as you are aware, like, I am a huge Shrinking fan. I mean, if nothing for like, and it's not even just for the Harrison Ford of it all. I mean, like, and it is about the Harrison Ford of it all, right? Like, the ability to get a coaxial performance out of this man is truly fucking wild. Like, to me, that's like the most elite thing that's happening on TV, is that Harrison Ford is not only doing TV, but it feels like Harrison Ford cares more about this role than the last 30 years. Like, the last thing he cared about was fucking Presumed Innocent, right? Or The Fugitive. And then he just didn't care anymore. And now all of a sudden he's fucking caring. And he's showing the reasons why we love him. And why he is a, like, he's not just a movie star, but he's a great performer. It's amazing. And it's, again, it's the Ted Lasso triumvirate, right?
You'll appreciate this too. I can only judge because I've only seen the season premiere, but I'm going to say 20 to 25% more Ted McGinley.
Oh God, yes. Yes. Ted, like he, like, for people that know, he is like a true, like, he's a, like, he's a guy that never got his shot, but absolutely, like, it's okay, because now he's got like this plum role, right? Like, it's like the best role possible. Do you think, because of the Krista Miller of it all, do you think that that's fucking, like, they're basically writing what's his name, the guy who created the show in Bad Monkey,
Bill Lawrence? Yeah,
Bill Lawrence.
It's 100% Ted McGinley is playing Bill Lawrence. 100%.
It has to be, right? Like even down to the casting, he kind of looks like a better looking version of Bill Lawrence, even though Bill Lawrence is, you know, he's an attractive dude. He's not a bad looking dude, but it's like, it feels like that is their relationship, like, in real life. Like, Krista Miller is all sass and just kind of whatever, and Bill Lawrence is like, happy to be here. Happy to be here. I'm going to continue on with my happy ways. So yeah, like, oh, that's great. That's great. Like, I like anything that does that, like, especially because he was such the cherry on top of the sundae of every episode of last season that he was in.
He would only have like maybe a minute in every episode. But like, it was such a great minute. It was just walk in, like, nail the joke as you're literally walking from one end of the camera to the other end of the camera. Like, there was no time to like dwell on anything. Just, here's the joke, and I'm exiting stage right. but again, only one episode in, but it was a lot more Ted McGinley, which made me happy. I'm excited to hear what you think about this show. So do you want more shows you should be watching, or a show you absolutely should avoid?
Let's do a show we should avoid.
Like, don't fucking watch Tomb Raider.
Oh God, like I wasn't gonna do that anyway. So I mean, it, like as much as I love Hayley Atwell, like everything I saw about it, I was like, no, this is not gonna happen.
It was so boring, man. I watched one episode. I don't know if I can watch anymore. It was really boring.
Okay.
So, and it also references a lot of, like, I'm assuming it's referencing stuff that happens in the game with no context of what the hell that is. And I'm just like, I haven't played a Tomb Raider game since the first Tomb Raider. So, I don't know. I thought this was going to be more of a, like, Lara's story from the ground up, and it's more of like we start here and you get little flashbacks of things, but then like I can never tell if we're in the present day or in a flashback. It's really difficult. And then they try to set up a mystery of like there's a character who shows up who's masked, of course. And, like, who is it? But they don't do a very good job because it's like, well, it's obviously the dude you thought was dead from the jump. The animation is not great. And it's not great, but I enjoy it way, kind of like the Gremlins show. It's like, well, animation isn't great, but, like, it's, you know, still enjoyable and it's... Yeah, this feels like it's trying to be adult, but also the animation is not great and the story is boring. So, just avoid that altogether. I may watch some more of it, and if it gets better, I'll let you know. But based off the first episode, I don't think we're gonna get a second season unless they've already done a second season, a la Velma.
So. Yeah, that's good. Well, I expect like four more seasons of Velma
you didn't think so. It's finally canceled, but yeah. Are you a game show person? Do y'all watch game shows?
Yeah. Okay. I am.
So this is definitely something that you can watch with your wife if y'all are both fans of game shows and you find Travis Kelce remotely charming.
The Are You Smarter Than a Celebrity
on Amazon Prime. It's weekly episodes, even though you can kind of tell they filmed them all at once, obviously, because it was filmed in the off season. There's a great, like, I only watched the first episode, but it's a great list of panelists. Like Ron Funches is there. Nikki Glaser, Natasha Leggero, a bunch of great comedians. Chad Ochocinco is one of the panel.
Of course.
He's pretty funny. It is very much like the Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader thing. It asks this basic questions. Like, it's not groundbreaking, but I don't listen to the Kelce podcast.
Okay.
But I definitely understand the charm that like so many athletes like aren't able to be personable, but like as a host, like he's going to have a really good career post NFL, assuming he doesn't break his neck. So beyond the Taylor Swift of it all, like you know, whatever with them, but like he definitely has a career as a TV personality, like as a host, as like I don't think this guy gets relegated to, like, Tony Gonzalez is great, but like that's what Tony Gonzalez needs to be doing, talking about football.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I think this guy, like, he's got something, you know, and it's very charismatic, and it's a fun show The first episode was a lot of fun. It's really, it does do the thing where it's like, when you know the answers and like these people who are famous don't, it does make you feel really good about yourself. So that, you know, there's a bait, like one of the questions is Nikki Glaser it's something to do with her having a backbone, and like it's just so ridiculous, or like fill in the blank, quote the Raven, and like some of them didn't know Nevermore. So it's like stuff like that where it's like, oh, I feel super smart now, even though these are like elementary school questions. It's like adults are stupid, but it's fun. It's a fun, like if you're eating dinner and you just need something that isn't going to, because there's no plot here. It's just a game show. So, I really did enjoy the first episode, and I am going to watch it, and I'm going to wind up becoming a big Travis. I don't hate Travis Kelce, but like I'm going to wind up becoming like a big fan of him personally. And then, you know, we'll see what happens there. So
he's, you know, like I do listen to the podcast. It does. How can I put this? Like it's very like on brand. If you've ever seen a clip, it's just them.
Yeah.
Them, like it's just the Kelce boys talking. Right.
I've seen clips and I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of cute and charming. And like, yeah, his brother's fun. And like, yeah, it's cool that, you know, I've been a brother with a brother, you know, that two podcasting brothers, it can be fun and, you know, it can be combative and you know, I get it, but like, I just never dove into it. But now I'm just like, I kind of like this guy. I get it. I get why everybody's smitten with this guy and this family and this situation. And he seems like a really personable dude. So,
absolutely.
All right, three more shows. Real
okay,
quick.
Do you have time for this?
For what? Three shows?
Okay.
Real quick. Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage, spinoff of Young Sheldon. If you're invested in these stories, it is a fun show. It is a fine show.
Mm-hmm.
The best joke in the entire show is, so if you watched Young Sheldon, so Big Bang Theory was a more traditional sitcom. There's a laugh track. Mm-hmm. / audience, whatever. Young Sheldon was non-traditional. It was more like Wonder Years, where it's telling a story. It's funny, but also dramatic. And Young Sheldon is an absolute fantastic show. So much better than you would think a Big Bang Theory prequel would have any right to be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You've said that you banged the drum for that show.
Yeah.
Which I love. Like, you know, talking about turning around and like being clear eyed about something, like, you know, and not letting something judge another thing. So,
so this is a spinoff. Georgie, his older brother, his wife, Mandy, they had a kid. They've moved in with her parents, played by Will Sasso, and I forget the actress who plays the mom, but you'd recognize her. The very first scene of the very first episode of this show, they're sitting down watching TV and they're watching Frasier. And Georgie says, I like Frasier. Frasier's he calls it a laughing show. And Will Sasso's like, what do you mean it's a laughing show? And it's funny because I made the Wonder Years comparison. He does too, which is maybe why it's in my head. He goes, well, you know, there's funny shows like the Wonder Years who don't tell you when to laugh. And then there's shows like Frasier. They tell you when to laugh by playing people laughing.
That is so true. Oh my god.
Cue the laugh track for Georgie and Mandy's first marriage. Yeah.
Oh my god. It's hilarious.
Cementing it as a more traditional, like old school sitcom.
It's a multi-camera show.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
truly
yeah.
like the way that Big Bang Theory was. Like, it's gone yeah. back to the roots of it. Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's fun. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It has a very Roseanne vibe to it, not as solid as that show was, but okay. there's enough to build here. I don't know if it can get to Young Sheldon levels of like, this is one of the best shows on TV, only because it's more of a sitcom and less of a we're telling this story kind of show. So okay. we'll see. Last right. two shows. You okay. know, you're talking about Apple killing it. You know who else yeah. is killing it? And I keep saying this. Fucking Peacock, man. Like, I watched, so not so much this, but I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. I watched the first episode of Teacup, which okay. is a new, they debuted a lot of stuff the last few weeks for
yes,
October.
For Halloween. Yep.
They make a big push for Halloween. Have you seen anything on Teacup?
I know. Okay. So, they were showing it at Fantastic Fest and I was covering it remotely. So I know the reveals because I accidentally read an email that told us specific, because like, if you could request it, you could get four episodes up to the big reveal. So I actually know the big reveal. Of the show.
Hey, I've only watched the first episode.
Okay, so I'm not gonna ruin it. Like, there is a big reveal that they're hiding. And so I'm aware of the show, the concept, the story, everything. I will remain mum about, like, when you talk about it, because I don't know the way that the email was worded. Like, it talked about the whole entire show, so I don't know what's been revealed and what hasn't, because it's a very... It sounds like it's a show based on some central mysteries happening.
Yeah, so the first episode, which is all I've watched, this mm-hmm. family, like, it opens... I thought I was watching the third episode, the way the show goes. Like, there's so much stuff you're just dumped in the middle of. Like, mm-hmm. the big draw for me is Scott Speedman and Yvonne Strahovski.
Yes.
Parents, they have a farm in rural Georgia. Like, they're not happy with each other. Something has happened. One or both of them possibly have had an affair. Like, his mother is there. Like, there's some animosity between the daughter-in-law and the mother-in-law. Like, there's all these things in play, and then there's something that's happening in the woods that surround their house, and their son goes missing. That's the first episode. And it's intriguing, but also, like, it made me feel a little lost. Kind of like the show Lost, where I'm just not sure what's happening, which I know is what they're driving at, but there's not a whole lot there to make me care about finding out what's happening. So,
okay,
it's very moody. It looks fantastic. It's very well acted. Kathy Baker plays the mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. Love Kathy Baker. She's a fantastic character actress. She's been in so many good things, including Picket Fences, which kind of just has like that sort of kind of spooky vibe to it.
Like early era David E. Kelly stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's something here, and I'm probably going to keep watching it just to like find out, because I know that there's a reveal, and it, you know, I want to find out what that is. But adversely, on the same streaming platform, all episodes are currently available of this show. I watched again, only one episode, but I watched the first episode of Hysteria.
Okay.
1,000% you need to watch Hysteria.
Okay, okay, so this may be on my list. Is this the one with Bruce Campbell as the sheriff?
Yep. Julie Bowen is in it and doing things that are not Julie Bowen-esque. We all know Julie Bowen from Modern Family. If you watched the Boston, speaking of David E. Kelly, like, you knew Julie Bowen from like that legal drama stuff. This is Julie Bowen, like, kind of doing something different. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. That's all I need to know, because I'm definitely on board for it. As soon as I saw the concept, what the Hysteria is.
It's full on 80s satanic panic thing. Yep. Like, it's fun. And it's also spooky, and it's also mysterious, and it is this weird blend of things, a la Stranger Things, but not like a ripoff of Stranger Things.
Okay.
But I absolutely loved the first episode.
Like, I was getting a kind of vibe of, so I know that you were a fan of, I think you were a fan of this show, because I was, and it was, Kevin Smith was involved with it. Is it kind of like giving you the Reaper vibes, like that kind of, like?
Yeah, it's not as cheeky as Reaper.
Okay. Okay. But it's got that kind of, like, what I like about Reaper is that it's very much kind of like a Evil Dead kind of riff, because it mixes horror and comedy so well, but it's more on, like you said, the cheekier side. And like I saw Bruce Campbell in this, and I thought Evil Dead kind of esque, maybe slapsticky, but also horror. They merge the two together, and it's like, I love peanut butter, I love chocolate. You got the peanut butter in my chocolate, you got my chocolate in my peanut butter. That kind of thing. That's kind of like my sweet spot. So like, as soon as I see Bruce Campbell on something, I'm gonna check it out, because I mean, fuck, it's Bruce Campbell. I'm super excited now that you've said this. Like, that makes it go to kind of like higher up on the list of things that I want to watch.
So the guy that created it, his name's Matthew Scott Kane. He was kind of, I don't want to say protege, because I don't really know, but I know that he worked on like 3 seasons of American Horror Story.
Okay, so Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, so like, it's in that, like, Ryan Murphy can do the thing where he walks the line of like silly and serious. And I feel like this show very much does that. So it doesn't surprise me that he's like from like that he worked under Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, okay. That totally makes me want to see it even more, because like, I don't think that we talk about it often enough, but like, I'm a big fan of Ryan Murphy's horror stuff. Like, I'm a Ryan Murphy fan. I like since Nip Tuck, I've liked the arch tone that he deals with. Like, I like that kind of overheated, overwrought, like, melodrama that he brings to everything. Like, we were talking about Travis Kelce. I'm actually kind of very intrigued by Grotesque, just because he's in the show and I want to see what he does as a performer, because like everybody has said that he wants kind of like that Burt Reynolds type of career. He wants to transition, or Jim Brown. He wants to transition over and do movies. Like, he's not fucking around. Like, he wants to do, like, he wants to make that transition. Like, he wants to do the Rock thing, which is become a star, which, I mean, he's kind of positioned himself to do that. But I'm like, before anything, I like Ryan Murphy and what he does. I may not like the end product, but I will always give it a chance, because it's always at the minimum, entertaining, if not a train wreck at its worst. But so, it's a watchable one.
I never got into, like, I watched, I think, the first, like, two or three episodes of American Horror Story, and I just never got, like, it never grabbed me. So, like, my Ryan Murphy stuff is pre that, like, Nip Tuck, whatchamacallit, Glee, you know, all the stuff he was kind of doing. So, like, his horror brand, like, I'm familiar with it, but it was never anything that really grabbed me. But this absolutely grabbed me. It might drop the ball. The fact that all the episodes are available and I can kind of just, like, watch them all kind of helps. So I watched Teacup. I know it's got, like, three episodes out, but, like, I was like, I kind of like the vibe, but, like, it's going to be a week-to-week thing. And then I was like, oh, I wanted to watch this because it's got... Oddly enough, I didn't know that Bruce Campbell was in it. I knew that Julie Bowen was in it. And I love Julie Bowen. And I'm like, I want to check this out. So I watched... I was like, I'm going to watch this. And then it was like, oh, all episodes available. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, I'm definitely down for that. So... because I don't feel if it's not great, it will become like the background show for the week. so I can just kind of be like, I know what happens and I watched them all. It's fine. But I was so sucked into the first episode. I mean, it has a very like Scream opening, like these two characters are going like hot and heavy. And then, she hears a door slam in the house and she thinks her mother is home and she makes her boyfriend go hide in the closet. And then, like, somebody in, like, a fucked up mask comes in and tries to kill her. And then he jumps out and tries to save her. And, it's very, like, old school horror kind of thing. But then, like, you add the Satanic Panic thing to it, they have amazing needle drops, like, the music you think they would have. But then, like, there is a true horror element to it. It's not just the, like, oh, people are crazy, the Satanic Panic thing was bullshit. It's like, oh, wait, no, there's actually something going on. What is going on?
Interesting. Okay. Okay, like I'm definitely intrigued. I was before, but now it's gonna go up to the top of my list.
I think this is a perfect October show. Like, build up, like, if you need something kind of spooky to watch for October, I think this is absolutely it. It's nice. Fantastic. Well, the first episode was anyway. Like, it's enough that like I'll probably. Well, it's a lot of football this weekend, but I might burn through about half the show before next week. So, So, yeah, that's like I said, I watched. When I was looking at my list, I was like, holy shit, I watched way more TV than I thought I did. Like, I didn't watch anything this week. I was like, oh, yeah, I actually did watch some new shows. So, and I'll report back. I'm going to watch at least the second episode of Teacup. If it doesn't truly, truly grab me, I might check out until the finale and then burn through them because I love Scott Speedman. I think he's underrated is not even the word. Underutilized. Like, is his agent bad? Does he just not? He's just very picky about what he wants to do. Like, I don't get it, man. Like, he should have been an absolute breakout star. And
well, think about it. He's Bradley Cooper before Bradley Cooper. Like, Bradley Cooper stole his thunder. Like, literally stole his thunder. Like, I don't even know how that happened. Like, you know, I mean, they both came from the JJ universe, like each of them very different. One was in Alias and one was in Felicity, but Speedman has always been kind of mercurial when it comes to his career. It's interesting. Like, I love The Strangers. Like it's probably one of my favorite horror movies. You know, anytime you get a movie about a breakup as they, like, as a home invasion is happening, like, that's fucking, that's a sweet spot for me. But, like, even, like he was in the first two, he was in the first two, what's the werewolf
Underworld.
One? Underworld. And then he didn't come back. Yeah. He was just, like, he didn't want to do it. Like, and it's, like, but, like, he is absolutely, like, it's weird because you watch the first two movies and they're trying to make Kate Beckinsale a thing, right? But he is so fucking good at his role that he kind of steals her thunder, even though they're, like, making it all the provocativeness of her in that movie in the early, like, in what they used to do in the early 2000s, right? But yeah. you're like it's not like, it's like she's such a blank slate that
he was on Grey's Anatomy for a couple of years. I did know that, and I know that that keeps you from, like, taking bigger jobs, but, like,
yeah, it also pays for a lot of things.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, anybody who goes on Grey's Anatomy is like, I just want to live in LA and have a good salary. I mean, that's literally what it is. I mean, it's been on for 21 years. Like, I always often, like, I make fun of that show, but if you think 21 years, dude, like, that's been around since we were both in our mid 20s.
Yeah. I watched the first few seasons of it. So,
I mean, who didn't? I mean, we all kind of, like, were in that, right? Like, with Dempsey and, yeah.
I did not know this. He was in the Animal Kingdom TV series. The yes, show.
I did know that.
Yeah, I did not know that. So,
yeah,
that kind of makes me want to go back and watch it. I avoided that because I was like, "Yeah, I saw the movie. The movie is really good. I don't know if I need to watch the show." Also, it was on TNT. Who the hell had TNT? It was when we were all ditching cable.
Yeah, exactly. No, it absolutely was. I did watch the first two seasons of that show, and Ellen Barkin is amazing in that show. Like, she is super, like, if you like, you know, that kind of, like, the Christine Milioti, but older, kind of, like, that's kind of, like, the Ellen Barkin-ness, like, that's the kind of character she plays, like, this mother that's, like, running this, like, pseudo-crime family. Yeah. It's very much like Animal Kingdom, the TV, the movie, with Jackie Weaver. Like, she plays the Jackie Weaver role, and she does it just as fucking psychotic and evil as Jackie Weaver did in the show. It's a good show. Like, I watched the first, like I said, I watched the first two seasons, and then it just kind of, I think it was a little bit too much. Like, it felt like Sons of Anarchy, but on Venice Beach. On Venice Boulevard, more than it did, like, anything else, except for without the motorcycles and a lot of surfing.
Yeah,
so,
I really enjoy Scott Speedman, so I'm not enough to go back and watch more Grey's Anatomy because I'm just not going to do it. But I really like him. I do like Yvonne Strahovski too. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're enough to at least get me to continue with the show. But not to go on another small tangent, but did you ever see a movie called The Last Rites of Ransom Pride?
Yes, I did.
That's one of those. I was like, why is this movie not bigger? Like, why did more people not talk? I mean, I don't think it's, like, fucking the greatest Western ever, but
no.
It's, like, such a good cast and, like, I don't know. That's one of the first places I remember seeing Lizzie Kaplan and just being like, who is this? I think I'm in love with her.
Well, I mean, so, like, just something that you should always know. If a movie has Dwight Yoakam in it, I've probably seen it.
Yeah, like, Chris Christopherson's in it, too.
Yeah, R.I.P. Christopherson. Well, I mean, I think, isn't Dinklage in it?
Yeah.
I think that Dinklage, like, I knew Dinklage from Station Agent. Like, that was the thing, like, my dad and me, like, we shared. Like, my dad's favorite movie is The Station Agent. Like, and that should tell you something about my dad. Like that's, like, of all the movies, like, it's that, and then it's Brian's Song. The original Brian's Song, not the fucking Peter Berg fucking version.
Jason Priestley's in it, too.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I do remember that one. Another one that's really good. I don't know if you saw it, and it's very kind of like have you seen Dark Blue with him in it? That's the Kurt Russell cop movie.
Yes.
Movie is fucking wildly good. Like, he's really good in that movie. That was his
post Felicity thing.
Yep. And it made no money because it was so fucking dark and so fucking brutal. But I really, really liked that movie. He's done quite a good, like, he's done
24 Day with him and Marsden too. Like, that's, yeah, I mean, it's not great, but it's not shit. So, I don't know if it's a bad agent or like just picking bad roles or like, I think he's a fantastic actor. And like, I hope this show really does go somewhere and get some really, really good buzz. Because I would love to see him get like later career, like fucking high, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit older than us. I think he's turning 50 this year. But, you know, the sweet spot for an actor like him is like the 45 to 55, right? Like, think about, I always often think about Downey, because Downey didn't hit stride until he was 42. Like, he didn't get Iron Man until he was like 42. So like, most guys don't hit their super stride until like these kinds of guys, like the Carl Urbans of the world, right? The guys that we kind of love and go, man, why isn't that fucking dude in movies? And then you see them and it's like all of a sudden, like even Anthony Starr is like a dude who's been around forever, right? And he's about that age. He's about like 52 or 53. But he hit his stride as soon as he hit The Boys, and he was, again, early 40s. So it could very well be
and he's got a way about it. Like, it's the I know exactly what it is. It's like the worldliness. Like, so he's from London. His parents were Scottish, but he was raised in Canada. So it's like this, I don't, like, that gives this like aura to him. Of course, he's incredibly handsome too, but like, I don't know, like, he can do a lot without saying a lot. And like, that's why he works in Underworld, right? Like, he has like 9 lines of dialogue in the whole movie. But when he's in the scene, it's him. You have Kate Beckinsale in a cat suit and him, and you're like, there's something about that guy.
Yeah, it's like, who cares about Beckinsale? Like, I mean, she gonna be in this anyways. I mean, you know, with her like blank ass stare, like, but this dude, who the fuck is this? He was recently,
and then when he's fucking like all done up, and that last scene in that movie is one of my favorite fucking scenes in any movie ever.
Yeah.
Or it's not the last scene, but like it is the six-fingered man, like, duel in Princess Bride level of like, yes.
He recently just did the last Cronenberg movie. He was in it. He has a fairly big part. I mean, he's not Viggo Mortensen, but he definitely has a big part. I feel like he's like, and I mentioned Viggo because I kind of feel like he's kind of like Viggo, where, like I said, like, if it wasn't for Lord of the Rings, Viggo would still be
Crimes of the Future. I want to watch that.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting. Especially because I know it sounds weird, but this movie is very much about microplastics. I know that sounds stupid, but it's a very intriguing movie when you watch it, and you, like, it's a very methodical movie. So don't expect it to. It's a very Cronenberg-esque thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's under 2 hours, so it's not going to be dragging. You know, he loves sub 2 hour movies. He loves the 90 minute movie. I mean, The Fly is 93 minutes with credits. Like, I always think about that, and he manages to make it feel like it's 5 hours long because you're fucking watching somebody deteriorate before your eyes. But I feel like he's kind of like Viggo, where like if Viggo didn't have Lord of the Rings, Viggo would still be doing the same fucking movies he's doing now.
Yeah.
Right. It's yeah. not like he used his star power. I mean, he used his star power afterwards to make Cronenberg films. Like, that's like, let that sink in. Like, I always feel like Viggo doesn't get enough credit for just going, yeah, I could have had that Harrison Ford career, but really what I want to do is do my poetry, like, you know, be a punk rocker yeah. and make these like small films because I already made millions of dollars. Yeah. And it's almost like that with him. Like, it's almost like the Canadian-ness of him is like, it is such that he can't let himself be a superstar. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I just think it's a shame because I think he really does have something to him. And
oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, I think he's a good actor, and like, it's you know, when you can like command a scene and not really have to say anything, that's pretty special. So. But I mean, you know what, if he has the career that he wants, more power to him. Like, do whatever you're going to do. Like, I'll show up when I know you're there. So, you know, I'll have to find the Crimes of the Future. I want to check that out. So, anyway, running a little long, sorry.
No, not at all.
So, next week, Venom, right?
Yes. All right. Venom.
Which Tom Hardy, this week, this is the last one. That's what he said.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And then when it opens to $150 million and it makes over $1 billion at the box office worldwide, you know, they're going to try to figure out how to bring him in.
Him saying that makes me feel like conversations were had and it was made probably clear that he was never going to be in the larger MCU, and this is it.
Which is kind of wild, because I almost wonder if they're like, okay, so like, I'm gonna pose a question to you and then we'll wrap, like, I feel like we can wrap up here. Just a really quick question. How do you make Secret Wars without having Tom Hardy's Venom?
I mean, it's going to be laser focused on Downey Jr. and not as Doom, and not OG Secret Wars going like all the heroes
going up against each other.
Yeah, and then Spidey getting a new costume. Like, I think you just excise all of that. I don't actually think they'll do anything in regards to the OG Secret Wars. I think it'll be more in line with Hickman's Secret Wars, which was all these disparate universes colliding, which would still leave room for Venom, absolutely. But I feel like maybe there are ideas to introduce Venom into the MCU and Tom Holland's Spidey, and he is not going to play into that. So, other than maybe the fact that he left a piece of himself in the MCU.
Okay.
So
I can dig that. Like,
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe
no, no. That actually makes more sense than anything else, because, you know,
I do think you are right though. If this movie makes $200 million, Sony is going to beg. So, so we'll see. But he has said it's the last one. So, I think people losing their minds about the Null stuff, and like, oh, they've said that this isn't the this is only the beginning for the character of Null. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, this was only the beginning for the all these Spider Lady characters too. And I'm like, I don't know what the, like, why do y'all think this is going to be any different? This is not fucking Kevin Feige saying this. This is people at Sony saying this.
Exactly.
No.
Like, that's like, and I think that people are putting too much into these Venom movies. Like, they've made them think, like, they make money,
but there's not, like, it's, even think it's consistent within its own world, like, world building wise. And I don't have a problem with that. It the movie sets out to achieve something. I think it achieves what it's setting out to achieve. It is successful at what it's trying to do. I do enjoy it. It's fine. They don't make any damn sense. They're not consistent. It's tonally, like, massive shifts constantly. Like, anyway, we'll get when we talk Venom next week, we can get into all that. Until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can go read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieowl.com, where we've got a ton of reviews. Marie actually came back. She's doing, she was covering the London Film Festival, so she's got a bunch of big fall reviews. Like, she actually, like, on the site right now, she actually reviewed the Angelina Jolie Maria Callas biopic. So that's up on the site, along with a lot of other stuff. So yeah, and then my reviews, of course, my nonsense of, like, you know, Blu-ray and 4K mania is still present. I've got some pretty big stuff next week. You're gonna see 4K reviews of a Jackie Chan box set that's just getting released, and then of course Hellraiser. I got the 4K box set of the first four films. So. Nice. Watched them in. I'm reviewing the massive amount of special features right now. So, movieowl.com, guys. And then, like you said, we'll be back next week talking Venom.
Venom, Venom, Venom. The Eminem song.
Oh, my God.
Eminem loves him some Venom. All right. We will see you guys then.
Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Kal-El, number eight The Simpsons, number nine TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.